Welcome in to Real Kipper and Bourne. I am Justin Bourne. I am joined today by not Real Kipper, who sent me a text today that he's in St. Lucia, maybe? Anyway, he's just wherever he wants to be. He's not here. I'm joined today by the great J.D. Bunkus. Bunk, what's up? Sammy McKee, of course, on
you
my
guys
other
tell
side.
Kipper, when I come in, like, or do you just like hope he doesn't find out?
No, it's like cheating. Yeah. You know, you just like hope he doesn't pick up any clues. Yeah.
We were actually somewhat concerned about him today because usually, even when he's on vacation, he's like sends a great game with like six exclamation marks. Like
Marner scored a huge goal, and we got nothing.
Like there was zilch, and I was like, we had talked about it 10 minutes before he texted us. And we thought he was in Florida. Turns out he's at Cabot St. Lucia somehow. Yeah. So
I literally said to Sam, he is really into the Leafs. It's not like a fake thing. And he, like, to hear nothing, I was like, I actually hope he's okay. Like, I haven't heard from him. So
that's what makes him great.
No comment.
Could you, what's that?
That he cares.
Legitimately
cares. Yeah. Because so much of it is, well, you know, some fakers.
There's a few out there.
There's a few fakers who fake.
Hey, listen.
He's not a faker who fakes.
I have a few fake nights over the year.
I think over 82, you're forgiven a few times.
Honestly, I keep waiting for the time where it will mean less.
Did you think by this age that you might?
No. I think that there's like, I'm kind of embarrassed about it.
Like it still means so much to me.
Yeah, that it's just like I'm watching March Madness and I care so much about these games and I'm watching Leafs games and hockey in general and I'm just so invested in sports still to this day. I'm like so excited that the Masters is coming.
I know.
And I'm like, I don't know if this is supposed to be what you're doing at this age. I feel like you're supposed to have...
Well...
Like, aren't you supposed to be learning how to, you know, build a carburetor for a classic car?
You know, I remember asking one of my musical friends in high school, I said, do you think I'll outgrow rap? Like, do you think that when I'm a 40-year-old man, I'll be, like, not into rap? Yeah. And I was, like, 38 and being pretty into rap.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't think I'm ever going to not be into rap. I'm 42 now.
Yeah.
It might be waning.
I hope that never happens to me. Because I love the illusion that I'm still young and cool when I'm listening to my headphones, going around listening to rap.
Yeah. Today's a great headphone day outside the city of Toronto.
Oh, perfect.
You just feel like you're in a movie walking down the street. But beautiful.
Buddy, you see that Pedro Pascal commercial for the new earbuds?
No.
Where he's dancing around town because he's got the new AirPods.
You got to get those new earbuds.
No, I'm saying like...
Everyone loves that guy.
No, that was me. Oh, my God. He's got universal popularity. But that was me today in the sunshine where I was like, I thought about not coming here. I was like, I'm just going to stop on a patio and send you guys a picture and be like, couldn't make it.
I totally would have got it.
Yeah.
Now, part of the reason everyone's vibes are so good, Toronto Maple Leafs win last night. They beat the Florida Panthers in, let's just say it, a big spot.
Yeah.
That was a big spot. This is division on the line. You know, there's some pressure with Florida on a back-to-back. They're without Ekblad. They're without Tkachuk and Barkov. You're supposed to win that game. You're in a big... This, I would say, typically... is a spot where over the last few years, the Leafs would just let us down. Did you take anything from last night from them not letting us down?
Can I give you an actual hot take with that?
Buddy, it's why you're here.
I think that was more important to beat them, missing those guys and being in a back-to-back, than it would have been had it been like the full Florida team.
God, I love that.
We joked about it. We joked about it when we left the studio. Like, don't show them that Barkov isn't playing. Like, don't tell them.
Right.
You don't want them to know because as soon as they have any reason that it's going to be any easier over this whole era, it has gone poorly.
And is that it for you?
Well, it's a couple of different factors. One is that these guys are chokers who choke. They have choked every which way.
So many times.
They live to choke. They've had
George Bush and pretzels.
Games to close series at home. No. Beat the Montreal Canadiens one time. Just do it once. Over the next three games. They're like,
Absolutely not.
They're the meme of the Lord of the Rings guy that refuses to throw the ring and then gets the whole thing going after the first war. That meme. Beat the Columbus Blue Jackets. Absolutely not. That's a choke to me. You were favored. That was the Columbus Blue Jackets. You're going to beat that team.
Sure could have.
And so for me, if you're like, this year's all about tests. The regular season is a test, right? Mm-hmm. So what tests does this team pass? Mm. And when you're in a huge spot where it's the must-win of all must-wins, I actually kind of think that the pressure on them sort of amplified the more bodies were out of the lineup for Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Because Florida's going to get, you know, even more desperate, caged animal game, where they're saying, hey, you don't think we can win?
Yeah.
We get the nobody believes in us factor. You're the ones who have everything to prove in this spot. And then what happened? Marner scores. Matthews is physical. He's like knocking people over. Tavares scores another beautiful goal. Nylander sets him up on a beautiful play and just making plays all night long looks incredible. Their goaltender, who has not played in any big games, plays in his biggest game and passes every test with flying colors, protecting a lead in the third period where it's like, if he lets in a leaky goal, what's the conversation today? And so to me, it's like, you're a choker until you aren't.
Habits take time to break.
There you go. Trying to take steps. I don't know what that was.
Oh, dude, some drops here and there on the show.
Yeah, I wasn't ready for that one.
I know you weren't. I could tell.
You have to pass these, like, choker tests, and they haven't had regular season stretches where any of it has mattered. Here was a test. You passed it.
And I think,
check.
Yeah, and I think particularly because the test they may face in the first round, if this goes well, and last night was a big step to making it, is going to be a choker test.
Yeah.
Because you could draw the Ottawa Senators, who, if you're a Sens fan, you love that that is the situation you're entering the series. But it will be, you're supposed to win this series. You're supposed to be the better team.
That's why the Marner thing is, like, especially important too, right?
Yeah.
Do you think that, okay, everybody cared about Four Nations in this country, but do you think there was a player with more pressure than Mitch Marner in that tournament?
No, I don't.
Well, because it's factually correct.
Yeah.
You think Connor McDavid, even though there was like a little bit of the, hey, he can't win the big one stuff that American media likes to do with him that is not like aware of.
Insane thing to say.
Yeah.
I'd say there's probably more pressure on Binnington.
I don't think so because
Binnington. Yeah, I mean, everyone crapped all over Binnington and said he shouldn't be the starter. And then
High pressure.
Goalie for Canada is more pressure than on Marner, no question.
And he could have lost his job. But in terms of like Binnington, one, he's already a Stanley Cup champion.
For sure.
And two is that when he goes back to St. Louis, you think that St. Louis would have been having major conversations about Binnington?
And also, let me say something insane to sort of further your point here, which if Marner was terrible in the Four Nations, it goes terrible, you know, 1-2 assists, he's down to the fourth line.
There were some moments.
There were some moments where you thought it might be the case.
Where it wasn't going.
Think about how much it flared up when those moments happened.
But if he were terrible all the way through the tournament and it just ends, when the Olympics come around next year, there would have been a lot of people saying, I don't care if he's fifth in the league in scoring. He can't play in these big games. So that pressure amplified it too, and he answered the bell.
That's it.
So the answering of these bells, and last night being another one, Four Nations being one, it feels like, so I wrote an article today for the website where I said there could be a version of Marner where I can see how it works in playoffs. He's never going to look like the guy he looks like against Columbus in November when he dominates and he has the puck the whole night, 2 goals, 4 assists. It's never going to look like that in playoffs. The teams are too good. They're too hard on him. But there's a version of him where he's just around it and he keeps at it and keeps at it. And he's so talented that eventually a seam opens up. And he hits Knies with that pass or McDavid with that pass. And let's say he's not going to be dominant, but he can chip in a goal and an assist in a big spot. All of a sudden, I don't need him to be. Matthews, we need him to control the puck, control the play. Marner could just contribute some points and people will be happy.
So I think your guys' show is at its best when there are disagreements, passionate disagreements.
Yes.
But
that's
today,
funny because I hate that.
I know you do. But that's why, especially knowing you, I love it because it forces you to actually do it.
You get
pushed into a position where you try to be passive. You are the last guy on earth that wants to fight with someone.
Yeah.
I've had many times where you and I have tried to debate something and you just completely bow out and I'm like,
fight me.
How dare you? Fight me. I said something very similar last night on Leafs Talk that Marner sort of gave a little bit of the script for him, which is be defensively responsible, be dangerous on the power play, right? Because the story of the season, by the way, with the power play is, Mark Savard deserves a lot of credit. The players all deserve a lot of credit. Story of the season is that Mitch Marner running things from up top and being a credible shot option who also sees the ice perfectly and makes decisions within an instant has completely changed the dynamic of this group. And like you can pinpoint it to when this power play became the best in the NHL.
It's so funny that everyone's like, they don't have a number one D. They can't have someone run the power play. And it's like, good news.
He
can do it.
So last night, I thought the exact same thing. This is what it's going to come down for you. There's so much of a discussion always with playoffs about like process versus results and whether you get the bounces or not. No one has ever needed the bounces to go correctly more than Marner this postseason.
Yeah.
Everything is going to be judged on the bounces. I don't care if you looked good on the penalty kill and you're making good reads. Like, obviously it matters. Like, to help keep the puck out of your net, awesome. I don't care if you're cycling the puck around and you're having the Montreal series where you got the chances. I care if you got the finishes. And that's it for him is those few moments where he gets those plays, like he did in Team Canada, in the championship game, like he did last night with the Leafs, if he's able to convert those things, he completely flips the narrative from what a lot of people feel like it's going to eventually become.
And if I'm Kipper sitting here, sorry, I'll let you in one sec. If I'm Kipper here, the point I'm making is that he maybe part of this has been that they haven't had the guys with him because, you know, when you dish it to McDavid in front of the net and he shoots it in, great. When you dish that to Bunting, maybe it doesn't go in. And that's, you know, he hits Knies. Knies might change that line where he can make plays to someone else who can help put away some of those chances.
And we mentioned this a little bit last night, but the way he reacted after he scored that goal in the third period of that game was a playoff-style celebration. And
needed it.
And we're talking about these checkpoints, and that feels, I mean, not to read too much into it, but that's another checkpoint passed here. And another thing is that they haven't played any of these meaningful games in the regular season. It's been either Tampa or Boston.
Known in November.
And him doing that, these guys know what the narrative is around them. They understand it. And it's like to have these delivery moments and feel good, it's never going to, until they get to the playoffs, we're never going to be able to be like, okay, it's changed.
Yeah.
But there are at least
glimmers.
There's hints or like little bit of glimmer that it is going to be different. Mm-hmm. Am I allowed to say that?
Yeah. It's fascinating to me too, watching them last night and seeing the way that they won this game, because we've spent so much time talking about secondary scoring. And while it's not down the lineup, you're right, it's up the lineup. Mm-hmm. Now they have Knies, now they have McMahon. They've never had better secondary scoring to those top four guys. It's just not in the places where we expected it to be, which is the third line.
Yeah, and that was like part of the, we're going to get Lawton, we're going to get whatever. Yeah. That has not turned into an offensive line.
That has turned into a line that does what to you?
Well, you'll be interested to read my article today where I make literally the case where I just said, and I said it mostly about Domi, where, you know, and I've said it on the show, but like he's not defensive. Last night, by the way, he blows his coverage and they end up in a 2-on-1 against. They get a backdoor pass. That's his guy.
Samuskevich misses a wide open net.
Right. Yeah. You know, so like he's not defensive and he doesn't like hit because he's not like big. So he wants to be offensive.
Not good on the forecheck.
Not. So he wants to be offensive. So he's trying to like sauce it through people and he's turning it over. And it's like, I know he's talented and he can do some things other people can't do, but it doesn't. I don't know the utility of that line.
That's exactly it. We spent all season long really focused on identity, right? And there was a point during the Leafs losing streak where I was asking, what is the identity of the team exactly? Now it's come into focus, right? They're a team that defends in front of their own net.
Mm-hmm.
Like they take away the easy area. They will let you shoot as much as you want. Like they're a shooting gallery. Every night, essentially, they're outshot. It's like they're going to probably lose every single deserve to win-o-meter throughout the postseason run.
Because that's the Islanders team that went to the conference final. Yeah. They were the same way.
They're like, shoot it. Yeah. We think we've got a big old monster back there that's going to be able to handle the softies. And if it's not him, it'll be the other guy, and we feel great about him too. We're going to take away the front of the net, and our big dogs are going to score a ton of goals because there is so much talent in the top six. We feel as though if we play a tight game, when we get our chances, they're going to be materially better than the ones that you are creating for yourself.
Yeah.
But when it comes to the bottom six, it has just about zero identity. I think that you've seen a little bit of it from the fourth line when they've run this group out there, which is why I thought it was kind of fascinating that they finally made the Robertson decision, because it felt like they were picking a lane to say, no, it's going to be more balanced, this third line. There's going to be balance to this. It's not going to be about offense, which it clearly is when you have Domi and Robertson, because it's not a defensive line. It's not a two-way line. Right. So what are you? You're an offensive line.
Yeah.
When they stopped producing and they stopped generating, you go, well, you can't have this because you're giving up too much the other way. So we've decided to lean towards balance. But the balance hasn't been there. Domi gets his chances. And I think that from an optic standpoint last night, he had some jump. He created a few chances from the slot. But in terms of the way that they want to play, which is dump it in and chase it, and like what's he going to do with that part of it? It's like, no, he's a puck possession guy.
Yeah.
That's the only game that he really knows how to play. With all due respect, that is his game. And then you're playing him with two other guys where what exactly did they do offensively? Like Kelly Yarncroke and Scott Laughton?
But the one thing with those two.
It is fascinating they're still playing him at center.
Domi at center, Laughton on the wing.
It really...
Yeah.
I mean, I've brought this up multiple times on various shows, but the fact that he's still not... Like, he's tried to get rid of Domi at center on multiple different occasions, and now that they actually trade for a third line center type of guy, and they still won't put him there over Domi, who has a ton of warts defensively, which the line's supposed to be. Mm-hmm. I think there might be a disagreement on what they thought
Lott was going to be. With the manager and the coach?
Like, I really do.
Well, of course there is, because the manager deemed that he was worth a first-round pick prospect. And the coach put him on the fourth line playing left wing, which was like he
crazy.
Replaced Ryan Reeves.
I know. The whole and Camp. They scratched Camp to put him in. Yeah. But I don't know why they won't go back to him at the center of that line to at least have the speed on the wings a little bit and Lott can dive down, because they don't think Lott's very good.
Well, and not only that, so this again gets back to the identity of third line. Normally, you'd say, Scott Lawton, what are you supposed to be? If you're a defensive center, are you going to win a D-zone draw? No. He's not a good face-off guy. Mm. And you just look at the way Berube deploys his centerman. Mm-hmm. I don't think he wants to put a left-handed guy out there who doesn't win face-offs and then has them in the D-zone with Max Domi beside him and Kelly Yarncroke behind him. So are you going to put him in the offensive zone?
No.
He can't win draws, so then you're losing possession there too. It's like, it's just... The criticism people had of Lawton that before he came to Toronto was he's probably best on the wing, but he hasn't been able to be like an impact player on the wing because he's sort of lost in terms of what exactly it is that they're supposed to be doing, which is why you could see the fourth line thing where they're like, simplify it. But it really begs this question, which I was talking about today on my show with Christopher Stieg. Did Craig Berube did he screw this up? Because is it all on Scott Lawton that he hasn't performed? Or is this also on the coaching staff for bringing a guy in and then immediately changing what was going to be asked of him within a couple of games and then jerking him around the lineup and putting him with different guys? And basically, if you're talking about a script for a guy to fail, this is sort of it.
Yeah. Yeah. And listen, I think if you're Craig Berube, you say, my priorities are us winning.
Yeah.
It's not making Scott Lawton the best player I can. Now, I do think that that's unfair to him initially, and he should have been given some run beside one of the two duos in the top six just to see if he can make it work. But, you know, he has something in common with Domi, which is Lawton was an offensive guy when he was young and came into the league to be an offensive guy. Domi came into the league to be an offensive guy. And both of these guys have that little... The Leafs have had it on their fourth line for years with Spezza and Thornton and all these, you know, sort of veteran guys who former great offensive players that you're being asked to not do it. They still want to do it. Mm-hmm. In their heart, they still will be like, okay, but I am the guy who does the backhand against Anaheim. Like, that's a Max Domi, right? And so for Lawton, the commitment to full defense, I don't know if it's happened yet. The one thing I hold out hope for on that line is both Yarncroke and Lawton are better players than they've been this season. Like, over the past few years, there have been better versions of them at times. If they're both better at the right time, Yarncroke's starting to skate a little bit better. Can Lawton find it at the same time in the third line be something?
I've just watched too much Yarncroke.
Yeah.
It's just like, I just know exactly what it's going to look like. And like, he scored 5 playoff goals in 100 playoff games that he's played. It's just, it's not,
But he's a space filler who doesn't cost you. That's all
Sure.
Just get us through a shift so we can get the top guys rested.
But I've kind of flipped from, to your point, being getting Lawton going. Like, early in his career with the Leafs, like, get him going, get him up with. And now I'd just be like, well, you can't.
Can't now.
You can't now.
Catch 22 with this team. It's gone now. The top six is so good that you can no longer really make the case.
McMahon has changed the second line.
That's what I'm saying, is that, weirdly, the great success of that line has changed the potential for what I thought was going to eventually be what could be best for the group and on its whole, which was to have Nylander try to drive his own line. Mm-hmm. Because the way that Nylander's playing right now, I don't think that...
He was so good last night.
He's amazing.
Yeah.
He was, again, their best player. I don't think that you could play him with just about anybody and not have the line be effective.
Yeah, I think he, more than any other guy in the team, maybe Matthews, could take whatever you gave him and make
situationally independent.
But yeah. Nylander did that for long stretches of this year. He played with
Holmberg.
And when did Holmberg
look his best?
With him.
Yeah.
And he had some moments in the top six playing with Tavares and Willie when they were searching for that winger for there. Yeah. They put Holmberg there. But I think the conversation about, you gotta maybe try some different stuff before the playoffs, and
I think that's gone.
It's way gone. Mm-hmm. Like, it looks way too good to have that conversation at all.
Well, the only other thing I'll say is, so last game, Robertson's out, and who else did they have out for Forbes? Oh, Pacioretty's still out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. With Pacioretty back in, mm-hmm. if you did Lawton in the center, and center, so Pacioretty, Lawton, Yarncroc.
Where does Domi play?
That's
well, you can't scratch Domi. Yeah.
Well, that's the conversation.
No, yeah, but it's not going to happen.
Why is that?
The team's going to scratch the like next hide pace forward out of the
trying group. To build the best lineup I can.
And, and not only that, like I actually don't think Domi has been a like real problem spot for them. I think that he's frustrating in the ways that you mentioned. Again, he's not a perfect player. He's not going to have games.
He can give you something that no one else can down there. He's unique.
That's it. Yeah. He can actually score.
And listen, I mean, he great goal against Anaheim. He punches up the dude in Vegas like he, or whoever it was.
Florida.
Florida, yeah.
After hammering Verhaeghe, then he punched up.
Yeah, like he can do something once every few games. So you're right.
I just think there's way more X factor upside to a Domi than to a Max Pacioretty.
Okay.
Also, can I have the Pacioretty conversation with you guys?
Yes.
So everyone's doing the same thing that they did with Yarncroke, but now with Pacioretty, right?
Yeah.
Which is like they're missing a clear NHL player.
Yeah.
And everyone's looking at that and like dreaming on the guy and thinking about him as though he's something he isn't. And this happened with Yarncroke. People kind of looked at him and said, boy, when they get him back, that's like a real NHL player who can be additive to this team. Hey, you say whatever you want about him. He's better than Ryan Reeves, right?
Yeah.
And so you're thinking like, wow, that upgrade could actually have some significance with this team. But so far, the same thing with him has remained true, which is like, yeah, he's additive to a degree, but he's not any in any which way a driver. And
he's
you're going to have to look
addition by subtraction of someone not as effective.
For sure. But with Pacioretty, the idea that this guy is going to step into a playoff lineup, like he got a contract where they were like, hey, we need if you play 35 games, we'll give you more money. And it's hard for him to get there.
Yeah.
What are the odds that he's going to be able to stay healthy if this team was to advance into
one round?
No, yeah. It's not.
Like, so what? You're gonna scratch Max Domi?
I'm not scratching. Max
I know
Domi.
You're not. But this is the conversation we're having.
Put him on the left wing of the fourth line and hope that he turns into Rafi Torres again for a week and a half and just hammer somebody.
Right. But you absolutely cannot do that because the worst part about his game is when he's in the D zone. So you're saying we're going to try to win a D zone draw and then he's got to be the one against.
He'll be on the third line.
Yeah.
And so, you know, then you're looking at like Lawton you paid for. They're going to use Lawton. They're going to give him a chance to find it. So you're looking at like Pacioretty.
I think it's more likely that Domi still stays in the center with Pacioretty on his left wing and Yarncroc on his right.
And then Lawton
and that
the
they put
line.
Lawton back on the fourth line.
Lawton, Kampflorens.
Yeah.
And Holmberg doesn't get in.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds probably right.
But you know, I
if you're asking me like what's more realistic, I think it's that.
Yeah. The fourth line, and I was saying this to Sam, I went through like teams that have won the cup recently and their fourth lines and the success. The Leafs have a line that can be a cup winning fourth line. Like Kampflorens. Last year it was Lorenz, Nick Cousins, and Kyle Opozo.
This is a Kampf show, right? This is three guys who are all higher on Kampf than what he is. Yeah.
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 Kampf gets a lot of unnecessary hate. The Kampf guy.
Because he makes like 300K more than he should.
That's exactly it. If you didn't know what he made, you'd be like, this guy's effective.
It's fine.
I think there's a great case to be made that, you know, could he play more? I even think that might be your third line if you're talking about like Pacioretty, Lawton, Kampf, Lorenz, like however we write it up.
Well, that's what I thought it was going to kind of be when it was Nick Robertson on the third line.
Mm-hmm.
Where it was essentially
two bottom lines.
Bottom lines who, depending on what the game script is, you're chasing it, it's these guys. You're defending it. Have a seat, Nick.
You know, I think you might be right.
Yeah.
You may see the third line play 8 minutes in a game where they're leading early. You may see the fourth line play 8 minutes in a game they're chasing because you're rolling out Domi. But I do think Robertson will play in the playoffs. Like, you'll see him in games when they lose 2-1 or something. We need more offense.
And
him in there over Yarncroc.
And it'll be the crescendo of scratch and score nickname.
Yeah.
Like, if he gets a big playoff goal,
And he will. He's going to shoot it in the net.
Nick Robertson scores
a playoff goal. What's the date? April 3rd. Book it.
Really would be, like I said, I'm pretty proud of that.
He'll score the second goal in a 6-2 loss to the Ottawa Senators.
Also possible.
I don't know if you know, but like this is like different audience. But yeah, so I called him scratch and score
which is amazing.
He gets scratched and he comes in and then he scores on the second half of a back-to-back against
the Sharks.
I think
no stakes, Nick.
Yeah. He has scored a lot of scratch
and
score.
And so if you really believe in scratch and score, then that is kind of the perfect situation that you're deciding to do it in, which is, hey, playoff game where he needs more offense, it's him.
Yeah.
Yeah. No,
and
absolutely.
He's inspired and he comes in like he's, you know, a man on fire. It's like, I got to prove that I belong in the lineup and hopefully he shoots one in. And, you know, the way these playoff games have gone over the past few years. Like every game in the first round last year was 2-1 or 3-2. It is, you don't need four from him. No. You need one at like a certain time of a game. That's just like a clutch time.
You know what though? What I think what we're all kind of just circling around on though is that kind of same point, which is we're always going to talk about secondary scoring with this group because the big guys haven't been able to dominate. But yeah. This time around, to me, this is the least amount of excuses you have from secondary scoring because Nyes and McMahon exist. Like your secondary scoring isn't going to be the way that you build it traditionally with a hockey team. You're just going to have to lean on these guys to do it. Like the secondary scoring has to be McMahon and Nyes, and you can't count that as, well, those are the top guys.
Yeah.
To Sam's point, you're just trying to get to three.
Yeah.
If you get to three, you should at least be in overtime.
Yeah.
You know, you're just trying to get to three, and they haven't been able to do that. Is it 14 straight games? Is that where we're at? I forget.
Oh no.
That was the year before, it was a bunch of games
in a row where they scored two.
Yeah.
And they managed to win a couple. They won an overtime one.
And now they're even better suited to be able to do it.
Yeah.
Right?
They are. And that's something you mentioned was the net front thing. We actually have a Berube clip on competing at the net front.
Yeah, you can play it.
Let's drop that. Clip two.
Like, for me, when I watch it, and I'll watch it again, but live, the net front was key. We were hard around our net. We didn't give up the second and third chances. Like, yeah, they got a chance, but we were right at the net with numbers and competed there, and that's important.
I was just trying to track down Mike Kelly's Twitter feed because he had a tweet during the Kings game or after the Kings game where he said arenas should have quality shots listed too because shots were like 36-26 LA and slot shots were 17-9 Toronto. Yeah. You know, and that's what they...
Yeah, the old retired guy wearing a suit that does that, they should be like, hey, do the quality ones now too.
Hey, Jimbo. Yeah, I know. It's not...
How hard is it to pay for whatever tracking site?
Yeah, I know. But you're right.
They could definitely do it.
No, you're right.
They should do it, especially because it's friendly to them.
Well, yeah, the Leafs.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
This version of the Leafs.
You don't want to. That's one of those things.
I go to the Jays game. They put OPS up instead of batting average. I'm like, oh, it's the future.
Percentage of vertical rise or whatever on pitches, though. Yeah. They have a lot of numbers up at those games.
No, they do.
They really do.
You're right. What's at the high? What's
at too much?
Yeah,
it's too much.
It's too much. I love it.
The vertical drop on a pitch.
Well, I don't know what it means, but I'd rather have it than not.
I look at it. I'm like, oh, my third Bud Light. I'm like, what does that mean?
This percentage is up there.
Buddy, I am all for more things that get you talking in the seats.
Sure.
Yeah.
To go, what is this? Sure. And then you see it and you just chat about it with whoever you are in the seat.
But it's fair enough. But I think that clip we just played from Berube is actually one of the sneaky things that I've noticed about this team and that gives me a little bit more hope. You think about the last time they lost to the Panthers. In that game, I don't know how long ago that was, where Sam Bennett scores two goals, literally standing in the blue paint, where he's just jamming them away, and it's just like...
Wasn't he supposed to have been ejected or something by that point?
No, I'm talking about in the playoff. Oh. Not in the regular season. You're right. He committed an assault on Matthew Nyes, where he punched him to the ice, and of course, as usual, gets away with murder every
game.
Which
is actually sneakily one of his like patented moves, and they
punch in the head. And
the sneak punch.
Yeah, but he just... They had so much in front of the net, and they allowed it. And last night, they did not allow that.
No secondary attempts.
Carlo, to me, has been such a huge addition for that because he's not nasty, but good for him for fighting that other guy. But he stands there. He's huge. He's in the way. Tanev's really good in front of the net. McCabe's really good in front of the net. Alvarekman Larson's nasty in front of the net. Like, the guys that they have added have really made a difference in the battles in front of the net where, like Berube said in that clip, it's the one and dones. Guys aren't standing there whacking away. Stolarz grabs it, they're cross checking, or it comes out, they get it out. It's just been a lot better.
Sneaks a little punch in there, fella.
I'm glad that he brought that up because it's something I've noticed with this team that the net front battles have been way better than in years past. Nice. Where how many goals have you seen give up in big spots where it's just a guy standing in the blue paint, no one boxing him out, hammering it home? It drives you crazy.
Yeah.
It's been way better. Benoit's good at it too. Not great at a lot of other things, but he's great at that.
So all I can think of listening to that clip is how little I've actually listened to Berube.
Oh, we listen to him every day.
I know you guys.
Yeah.
And I'm saying that, I'm really impressed that you're able to get content out of it.
Can I tell you the funniest thing that we don't do on this show that Sam says is he calls him Sheldon Chief off the air because it's the same stuff.
It's just the same.
It's like positive.
Yeah. Except the one difference was, and I had this feeling, who was it that he crushed? the other day at the podium.
Oh yeah, we played it because it was shocking that he was mean to anyone or even hard on anyone.
Oh my God, it's the Devil's defenseman, Kovacevic.
Kovacevic.
Yeah,
yeah.
Kovacevic just has to play better and then walks off.
Yeah.
The one thing I love about Sheldon Keefe was every once in a while
he would just snap and say stuff. Yeah.
And the only thing that I hated about what he would do in those situations was not that he'd say it.
Walk it back.
It's that he'd always be walking it back the next day.
Yeah.
And I thought that that was always such a screw up on his part. It's going, hey man, say it with your chest and stand on it.
Yeah.
If there are times where you genuinely believe you screwed up, that's fine. Do it in private with that person. Just say, hey, I went a little too far. You're fair to tell. I've got an office. You can come by if you're bothered, but you're supposed to be a grown ass man who plays professional sports. You should be able to handle me snapping once in a while. And also when you have trust with somebody like that, I'm a little like that.
What's that?
I can snap.
No.
Yeah.
Is that right?
I can say things every once in a while that I don't mean.
Never seen it.
But for people that know me, you understand that eventually we're just going to be able to come and kind of hash out whatever that is.
Right.
And there's going to be a cool moment, and I don't mean like it's cool.
We're cool now, bro.
It's cool, bro.
Such a cool moment. It's that we'll have a cool down moment together, and things will probably actually be better from that than anything. And with Keefe, I just thought it was really strange that he felt so, like it was indicative to me that he wasn't as tight with those guys as you'd think, given that he did have to publicly walk it back instead of those guys just going like, hey man, we get it. It's
to
all
me,
good.
It made it feel like he wasn't in full, he didn't have full autonomy to do and say what he wanted. Like, was someone telling him he had to walk it back? Were the players? Was it?
I think.
But I miss those days where we'd get 3 days out of content one of Keefe's snaps. And I have not gotten a single thing from Berube this year where I've gone, we have to play that on the show.
It feels like he doesn't care. And I know he cares a ton, but he's just like, we'll get him next
time.
I know he cares.
I do think that there has been some conversation about what you say in the media in terms of them being like, don't do it. Don't do it. Remember that? What was it? The Amazon series or whatever that where they had the conversation. Was it Dubas? Like the narrative's out of control with Matthews when Matthews said, we got to open it up. Remember that? And he's like, the narrative that's out of control. It's like, they are clearly very conscious of the.
Yeah, I hate that you just reminded me of that because
there's like a mission statement when you walk into the coach's room. It's like, don't say bleep.
Yeah.
Like, don't say anything because, I mean, you love it and you love being able to talk about it for 3 days.
They don't love it.
They hate it.
Yeah.
So I think they probably told Berube. I mean,
but Dubas is gone.
Yeah.
And I know it wasn't just all him.
I mean,
right?
There's this guy, there's something here that connects everything.
No doubt. No doubt about it.
Former player.
I think that's an interesting read because mine has always actually been that Berube had the Cairo experience. And he lost a young player. And
he wants to soft shoe it?
Well, that part of learning younger guys is that they don't appreciate the criticism as much because it doesn't live in a press clipping that goes away. It lives online where everybody sees it because they all have phones and they check their phones and they see the stuff. Like
now you get a reputation as a guy who can't handle the next generation.
Yeah, and so you get that. But also, secondarily, I guess my more optimistic and hopeful vision of it was after a conversation I had with Rick Bowness, where he talked about how year two is the year that you really judge a head coach when he comes in, despite the training camp stuff, that's actually not it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a year to be able to get your systems in, to be able to get the trust of your players. And then when you come to camp the next year, feeling like all those details that you've tried to refine over the course of a season, they really start to show up more in year two.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a guy who's coached more games than anyone. So when he says it, I go,
Yeah.
I bet you that's true.
Makes
but
sense.
With Berube, it's like earn the trust in year one. Don't come in there and be fire and brimstone, throw guys under the bus.
It's the best way to start.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
It is the best way to start.
Earn trust, and then once you have it, then you can get more comfortable throwing out the odd barb or being a little bit more of like the quote-unquote accountability coach. Like, there's been that belief, right, that that's not who he is. He's not Mr. Accountability because he hasn't done it year one. I don't want to live in a world where I'm writing that possibility off in year two.
Yeah. Well, that's something to keep an eye on for sure. I want to go into
Kyrie, by the way. Having a fabulous season.
Is he?
Oh, yeah.
Blue isn't right
no,
now.
No, but like he's, I mean, he's got 63
Is there a bad
points.
Blue? All 30, they do is win. That's
32,
all
32 goals, plus 22 this year after being minus 12 last year. Yeah. Yeah. They're a wagon.
We're going to talk more about that. You know, got some thoughts on Patrick Waugh, how that relates to this conversation. We'll get more into it after this break.
Everything you need to know about the Raptors and the biggest stories around the NBA. Smith and Jones. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Real Born and Bunk and McKee.
Yes.
Today. What a day.
Yeah.
We were just chatting before we went to break about handling young players. And I know this is not Leafsy enough, but it was fascinating watching Patrick Waugh yesterday after the game. They asked him about Anthony Duclair, and he said some horrific things. You know,
God-awful.
He said he was god-awful. He's lucky he's in the lineup. Like, it was really bad.
So and, you view that as really bad?
I don't. That was poor tact.
In 2025, yeah.
Yeah. Like there's...
96? Fine.
You can have that conversation with him, and you can say he was bad for us tonight, god-awful, and shouldn't be in the lineup.
Well, I mean, you're the coach.
Yeah.
Then
yeah,
put somebody else in
right.
if you don't think he should be in the lineup.
But I do think it's fascinating that he said today Duclair was not on the ice at practice. Duclair and him, he said, had a great conversation. Duclair asked for some time to clear his head about it and left the team or isn't there, or isn't at practice, and Waugh said okay. That, to me, if that's what happened, is bonkers. That you could just tell your coach, I didn't like that you said a bad thing about me. I need some time, and just to leave is a crazy thing.
Fantastic if Craig Berube said somebody was god-awful.
God-awful. Yeah,
that, talk
he's
about
barely
three,
in the lineup.
Talk about 3 days
I don't
of content.
I just don't agree at all. I think that it's bizarre that in a world where you have what are supposed to be some of the most highly competitive people on earth, mm-hmm. speaking bluntly, that is in some way over the line. Like, when I hear that quote, I don't, like, that's nothing to me.
Yeah.
No one wants to be shamed publicly. But that is a public position.
Yeah.
Like that,
oh, you're
that
in pro sports.
Your job, the reason why you get paid millions of dollars, isn't because you guys get to play it in your rec league. It's because thousands of people fill the arena every night.
To be clear, I have the issue with Duclair saying he needs time away because of it.
No, I'm saying I have issues with both. Like, okay, also, this isn't someone who is like that's Patrick Waugh.
Mm-hmm. Seen a few things.
He's also been known to say a few things.
Sure, but I'm just saying that
true.
If Patrick Waugh can't say that,
who can?
What are we doing
here? Who can?
Yeah.
That's fair.
What are we doing here if Patrick Waugh, of all people on planet Earth, can't call you out when you have a tough game? And here's my assumption with stuff like this, okay? I think that if a coach is being performative and speaking through the media, a lot of the ways that it always felt like with Tortorella, where there's this like a element of it that feels very disingenuous and self-serving. And I don't know him. I'm just saying that was always kind of my read on it, where it was like he's trying to keep up a persona of being harsh, and so this is parts of the ways that he does it. Mm-hmm. I don't like it. I also don't think that if you are a player, like say Duclair, and your coach hasn't come to you beforehand and tried to work things out and done a different strategy before immediately going to just like, hey, it's your first bad game, and now he's just absolutely crushing you in the media – oh, then I could see you having a problem as a player. But if you are paid, again, crazy money, I don't care that it's less than baseball or whatever, you're being paid dream money to play sports and to be competitive. And that this sport, what makes it great is that so much of it is you can try harder than the other guy and it will have results. In basketball, you could try your ass off. You're never going to score on LeBron James.
Yeah.
Ever. Yes, does will matter? For sure. But in terms of hockey, why it's so much better in the playoffs is because guys are amping up the will factor.
Mm-hmm.
And so if a coach of Patrick Waugh's pedigree, who is fighting for a playoff spot, calls you out in the media, it means that he is at his wit's end, given his experience as one of the greatest players who's ever stepped foot on an ice surface, deems it fine to do so. What I would like to see from Anthony Duclair is he goes,
oh,
damn, this is a wake-up call for me.
Yeah.
Not like, I got to leave for a few days. Again, this is a tough situation.
And we don't know the details.
Yes. And listen, you can qualify it, but he is in the first year of a four-year, $14 million contract.
Yeah, 3.5 through 2028. Yeah,
and he's played 44 games, has seven goals.
And Waugh's not going anywhere.
Four assists, and he's a dash 15.
Yeah,
so,
in the words of Don Draper, that's what the money's for.
You'd be frustrated.
Like, I'm sorry, I'm not trying to be the old man yells at the cloud thing here, but it is painful to believe that not only are you going to get world-class everything, mm-hmm. but that you are also going to get white glove treatment from people when it comes to their criticisms of you, especially people who have the bona fides, who have the stripes on their jacket to be able to do so and were hired to make you a better player.
Yeah. Yeah, this is something where often, you know, Kip talks about guys' egos, and he wants to say that, like, you can't do this and you can't talk about people like that, but I do believe that this is what the coach is for. Yeah. And that's why having a coach with some, you know, credibility like Waugh, I think, has value. He should be able to do that. You also wanted to talk about a guy in the Florida Panthers, if we're going to turn the page on that topic.
I just want to say, just
yeah.
in general,
yeah, yeah,
that there is a huge difference to me between someone who is just trying to tear you down versus someone who is, you know, trying to...
working with you.
Trying to get your attention mm-hmm. because they want what is best from you. And if Duclair genuinely believes that Roy is just out there to tear him down, like, that happens in pro sports, that happens in life. Some people believe, like, this guy's out to get me,
yep.
right?
Yep.
So I'm not saying that that's not a possibility here. But in general, I think that if we are going to lose that in professional sports, then we're going to lose that just about everywhere. And, like, there is a value to being blunt and honest and critical of people
yeah.
that you need to have. And you certainly need to have it in an organization or, sorry, in a sports of all places where you're trying desperately to get that 1% of a 1% advantage over someone.
You know, we're...
You got to dance around a topic. You got nothing.
To zoom out a little bit on sports in general, guys are paid so much money yeah. now. They're, you know, like, just in general, the amount of dollars that they have, they often now, the balance of authority, that's the wrong word, the balance of who carries the cards, I guess, has changed a bit. Where often the players have longer term and more money than the coach, and they can say, if one of us is going, it ain't you. I think a guy like Duclair is in a tough spot because it ain't, you know, he's not that guy. You're not that guy, pal.
I'm looking at his seasons before this.
Mm.
I don't know how he got that contract. That's a bad contract.
They were desperate for some speed and some.
I think it's that dynamic is definitely real, what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it is also just the infiltration of corporate culture into something that is much larger, which is, like, the reasons that those dollars are there.
Mm.
And then all of a sudden there are people that are trying to ensure that those dollars are safe. Mm-hmm. And so some of that culture where it's like, this is a workplace. You can't talk to people that way. It's like, this isn't supposed to be that kind of a workplace.
Mm-hmm.
Just let this be something separate because it's been effective. There's a reason why you bought it. There's a reason why it grew to the place that it's in right now. And it wasn't by being a sanitized version where nobody could speak truth to one another.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think so. And the other thing, just one more note on Waugh and Duclair. Mm-hmm. And talking about this, I had someone point out to me, like, Waugh and Duclair were together in junior. Like, he's had him, he knows him. And this may be the ultimate, like, I know what makes this guy tick sort of thing. I wonder if Waugh's surprised by the reaction and how it played out, like how that's going to affect.
Yeah, well, or it could have gone the other way where Duclair goes, this is my nightmare. This is what I had in junior. And I
hate yeah. it. Yeah, that's
and it's more
too.
Personal because he feels like he does know him and that he has already been sensed. I don't know.
Again, I guess he had to take the money too because he got a lot of it. So yeah, maybe right. even regardless of hating the coach, he's like, I'm going to take it. I'm taking the $14 million. Yeah. Marchand?
Yeah, I forgot he was on Florida.
Watching him last night, I had this thought, like, yeah. I thought he was noticeable. I saw him a few times. You know, I felt like he was a little bit, I wouldn't say neutered is the right word, mm-hmm. but not the same. Maybe it's just that he doesn't play for the Bruins anymore and it's not the same feeling towards him or whatever. But I think it's also that, you know, he's a captain of another team, of a blood rival with that team.
Yeah.
And he's going into that room and he can joke around about being like, oh, he's a scumbag. Ha, 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 ha.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think it's going to take a while for him to sort of be able to find his role on that team. And, like, with all those studs that are already there, like, is there going to be enough time for Florida to get the A Brad Marchand out yeah, of the, like, it just feels like last night, you know, there's, you just see him on the bench and he's, I don't know, he's got that, not a long stare, but just, I know they're losing or whatever. It didn't feel the same that it's felt even earlier this season when he's playing with the Bruins, where it's like all you ever notice is him. I'm not saying he's washed. I'm not saying he's bad. I'm just saying that it's a very weird dynamic for him playing yeah. there.
The only pushback to that I'll have is you saw the clips of him with Canada and the Four Nations
sure.
team where they weren't a team, and he's the one guy who's comfortable being
I
like,
I understand
you
that,
know,
but that's a completely different scenario.
But I'm saying what you're seeing might be physical decline.
Sure.
It might not be
sure.
discomfort. He might not be the guy
sure.
he once was. And I, you know, I did get that vibe with Canada too, where it's like, God, the will's there and he's smart and he sees it. And if it comes to him, he's great. Yeah. But I don't know that he can control the play like he once did.
I think once the playoffs start, it could change.
Yeah.
There's definitely no question. But, I mean, this is going to be – there's how many more games left of the regular season before it starts? He's got to find his role there. Like, I've watched them play. He was good in the first game. Obviously, he's really buzzing. He sets up the overtime winner for Bennett. I think it's going to be an interesting dynamic. Going to a team of a group of guys that you absolutely hate, and it's just, I don't know.
Yeah.
I think it's weird. I think it's really weird.
I think that he doesn't care at all, that he probably fits in like a glove, because every dressing room that he walks into, I think that he is loved by people. He's been a leader for a very long time, and he was also raised by leaders like Patrice Bergeron and Zdeno Chara. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And if you were going to go to like hockey leadership school, you'd like have those guys be maybe like one would be the headmaster.
Right.
So I don't have any concerns about his fit with the Florida Panthers. What I think that you might be seeing a little bit of, which again is in a very small sample of a team that's on a back-to-back playing against the Toronto Maple Leafs in a must-win game, is that Brad Marchand and the Florida Panthers, they don't need to be. You know who actually doesn't care about the playoff matchup? Them. Mm-hmm. You know who's just trying to get healthy come playoff time? Mm-hmm. Them. You know who's getting Aaron Ekblad back and who's going to get Tkachuk back? And then who has their captain, their stud player, Alex Barkov? You think if that's a playoff game against the Leafs, like he's sitting in that hockey game last night? Like, no, he's a late scratch because they're going, relax. Mm-hmm. These guys are dying for it. Who are we? The playoff team.
Yep.
We need to watch how quickly we drive this car. We are pacing ourselves in this race. And then when we get closer to the finish line, which is playoff time, gas, 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 gas. And that is what I'm going to guess is going to happen with the Florida Panthers. And when they start to put their pedal on the floor and Brad Marchand is on that team now as an X factor with a line that is going to have Sam Bennett on it, boy, do I think that they are going to be a tough load to handle.
I do think that there's some risk of the plan of, hey, it'll just come together for us.
Sure, but he doesn't have to, he's not the driver.
No.
Like, when you're saying, the Team Canada stuff and he doesn't fit, it's like, he just needs to slot in and be a depth winger for this team.
He makes them better. There's no doubt about it.
Last thing quickly here. I had Jen do some homework for me. I sent a tweet last night, an incendiary tweet about Seth Jarvis scoring his...
Ah, yes, I saw that.
And some guy...
Do you want to share the content of that?
Someone dug up an old tweet of mine about Dubas, and I just... Yeah, this is a tough one for me.
Sorry, Hannah.
So was this when he traded Marlowe?
No, that was what, you know what that was? Tavares? That was 6 minutes after they signed John Tavares. Yeah.
July 1st, yeah.
6 minutes after they signed John Tavares.
That is awesome.
But some guy dug that up in the replies to that tweet, and I was like, good on you.
I got to tell you, I really deeply, like the people who have time.
I respect it. I
do not
that.
At all.
How do you search the day of someone?
I don't think you just search the name and Dubas.
Scroll through. But I can't imagine loving Dubas that much or hating Sam that much.
Well,
you're not really a hateable guy.
Well, you'd be surprised.
But it's one of those two things where you're in one of those positions where you either love Dubas so much, but you're also a Leafs fan, and you hate Sam. You're this perfect melting pot of those three things that you've decided to dedicate an afternoon to be like, and I know it doesn't take that much time, but for me, that's a situation where I'm like you, where I go, 10 seconds is too much time to be doing this behavior.
But I just thought it was funny. I got so many tweets when I sent out, because the context of it is that Seth Jarvis scores his second in a row 30-goal season. The pick that was used to him was the one that was attached to Marlowe to get rid of the contract to pay Kasperi Kapanen and Andreas Janssen. And I sent that out, and people were like, you took that out of context. I'm like, no. It's like, oh, Lou paid him all that money. I'm like, no, I just tweeted to say,
I will say that that is a tricky one in terms of me criticizing.
Because you never know if they're going to,
They just needed to get rid of Marlowe, and that was the price.
They just needed to win. And then we'd have been like, that made sense. They needed that money. But
anyways.
They didn't win.
Great to have you, buddy.
Bunk, thanks so much for your time. It is lovely to have you here. Yeah, we could do a 10-hour show and not blink.
Yeah.
Check out the J.D. Bunkus podcast. It is fantastic. Leafs talk as well. And we will have Bunk back more over the course of the season. We will see you in the National Hour.